This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, Universe, and welcome to the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings on Fox Sports Detroit, Ken Daniels, is going to join us. Always a great treat to talk hockey with Ken Daniels. He's been around the game for so very long, so we're pleased to have Ken on to talk about the Red Wings ahead of their visit to MTS Center tomorrow night. At the top of the next hour, the national hockey reporter for the Canadian Press, Stephen Wino, is going to join us. I'm just going to go out on a limb. I think we might have a question or two about the Toronto Maple Leafs for Stephen, given what's been going on in Toronto over the past two games and the media brouhaha that accompanies every Leafs disaster. All that and much, much more, especially on your Winnipeg Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus getting us on and off the air on this Wednesday evening. Gentlemen, good evening. How are you both doing?
Well, it's freezing outside. Aside from that,
it's only going to get really colder. Well. This isn't that bad.
It's not that bad today.
What?
Yeah.
2 days ago it was colder, no?
I walked the dog before the show. I had a nice walk. The dog was fine.
Why do I care about your dog walk? I care about the weather.
I know, but the dog was fine. She's a good barometer of the weather.
Oh, okay.
I found it cold. I wasn't wearing gloves or a toque. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Were you wearing shoes? Because there have been times when you've been known to walk around without shoes in the winter.
That actually is true, by the way. And there's a winter about 2 years ago, you didn't buy gloves for the entire winter.
That's true. As far as the shoes go, that was I wasn't liking how the shoes were fitting my feet, so I just... whatever. But whatever. Aside from
you could
that,
have waited to get home before whatevering the shoes yeah. rather than walking down Cordon Avenue in the middle of the night. But I suppose that's a story for another day and time.
Aside from that, we're doing good, though.
Okay, that's good to hear. Rich, you're well, too?
Yeah, Drew, I'm just really excited that the NHL got rid of the dry scrape. Can we start talking about that?
Sure. Hey, if you want to start the show with one of your patented Richie rants...
Just like, first of all, why did anybody create the dry scrape? I don't understand why they thought in the National Hockey League, oh, we need to clean the ice, call it a dry scrape.
As opposed to Zamboni.
Take 5 minutes of Zambonis on the ice, but not really doing anything on the ice, or doing very little. Making there be a lull in the action for 5 minutes, making the games longer than they already are. And then starting overtime, and nobody's into it, or in cases like Nashville, people are leaving. They didn't think about that beforehand. And then they come back, and a month and a half into the season, they get rid of the dry scrape. And then everybody's writing about, and I'm turning on the TV, and people are talking about scraping the ice. Like, this is a conversation for 5-10 minutes on the TV. Nobody's got anything better to talk about, like right now, than the dry scrape. And then I'm watching panels breaking down the dry scrape. It's unbelievable. What did you think of the dry scrape being removed? What did you think of Zambonis now no longer going on the ice after regulation?
Well,
I can't believe we're talking about it.
They were practicing the shoveling of the ice after the game last night at MTS Center. What did you think about the form that they were exhibiting?
It was excellent form. Nice bend. Good knee action. I was very impressed. I thought they were cleaning it up for John Fogarty. Isn't he here there tonight?
I believe
but,
so.
But actually, they were, no joke, they were practicing the dry scrape. You're not kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. After the game last night, we were up in the press box finishing up our night's work, and they had all the shovel crew that you see come on during the commercial breaks coming out to practice shoveling snow for the period between the third period and overtime.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a ice clearance revival. but as far as the... Yeah, that was terrible.
That was pretty good.
I think it was actually Kenny Holland who came up with it.
Yeah,
He was apologizing for it yesterday. You know, Detroit Red Wings are in town playing the Jets tomorrow night. And I agree with you, Richie. I think it really had a minimal impact on the game. I mean, really, the reason why they're canceling it, right, is because fans are leaving and it's taking a little bit too long. But as you said, why was it there in the first place? So I think as far as, you know, in the grand scheme of things in hockey, it's not really an issue that... I think many people thought was ever an issue.
Yeah. I'll just leave it on this note. I mean, you play in Edmonton, you play in New York. The Edmonton ice at the end of the third period is so much better than the Rangers ice after the dry scrape. Does it really matter?
Before the game starts, yeah. The ice in New York is that terrible to begin with. Anyways, you can sort of probably guess how exciting the Jets-Devils game last night was if we started the show with a couple minutes on the dry scrape. But, you know, for Winnipeg Jets fans, they will gladly take a 3-1 win on home ice, even one that wasn't aesthetically pleasing and wasn't the least bit exciting, especially given that the last home game had been the Jets-Penguins game that was a barn burner a couple weeks ago. But a win is a win, and the Jets with a 3-1 victory over an opponent that, you know, you would say they are better than, and for the season series, they end up taking 3 out of 4 points from New Jersey.
Which is, you know, which they've done a bit now. They beat Carolina twice. They take 3 of 4 against the Devils.
5-0-2 against the Metropolitan.
Yeah, and you have to be, because it's a terrible division.
That's right. I mean, there's 8 teams in the Metropolitan, so you play them 16 times, and so you've taken 12 out of possible 14 points.
Yep,
that's pretty good.
That's very good, and you're taking advantage of an opportunity there, Drew, and that's what you have to do. Central Division is going to be really tough, Pacific Division as well. Got to take care of business at home, and they did that yesterday, because you have to be able to distance yourself at home because you've played really well on the road so far. So, you know, if you're a Jets fan, again, it's going to be boring, because this team doesn't have the firepower to change trade chances. We've said that for a long time. So what are they doing now? They're buying into the defensive side of the game. And credit to Paul Maurice. He's done a nice job here coaching this squad. I like his attention to detail. I don't think it's talked about enough. I like his face-off alignments, some set plays off of face-offs that have created chances. For example, yesterday's kind of pick play there that Mark Stewart makes a pass to Matthew Perreault for goal number one. But there's been a number of plays that have chances that have been created based on face-off plays. I like that he's having his strong side winger take draws on that strong side. So, for example, Evander Kane taking draws on the left side of the ice. Lowry taking draws on the left side of the ice, if he's playing with Scheifele like it was yesterday. Allowing players to succeed at what they're good at. And that's what coaches are supposed to do, and that's what he's doing. So credit where credit's due. I mean, you can talk all you want. The players have to affect the game plan. But at the end of the day, this team is buying in to what Paul Maurice is selling right now, and you have to give the coach credit, because we're so quick to give the coach blame that we ought to give the coach credit.
Let me just interrupt before we hear from you about last night's game. On Sunday, though, when you were doing pre and post with Rick, you were critical about Paul Maurice's decision on the overtime faceoff.
I was, I didn't like. Sure, that's nitpicking, Drew. But I will restate that. I don't understand why you have Blake Wheeler as a winger who's taken less than 15 draws in the entire season, taking an important own zone face-off with Evander Kane as the other guy in a 4-on-4 in-division game. And by that I mean Evander Kane is a winger, but takes draws more so lately, a little more in the left side of the zone. But even then, he's not a center. So he can't take that draw if Wheeler gets waived, and Wheeler doesn't take draws. So that's an odd. I'm surprised they didn't have Brian Little. I know Scheifele was hurt, and he's a right-handed guy. But Brian Little or somebody else, I know, you know, face off, there's changes and there's quick, you know, there's whistles and things like that. And Little, I don't recall if Little was the first guy off, but in any event, I'd rather have a left side face off guy like a Jim Slater rather than nobody where somebody doesn't take draws and then do the quick change after. You win that draw, Jim Slater wins that draw, makes a pass back to a quick skating Jets defender who clears his zone. Slater hops off, somebody else hops on. That would be my comment on that. But overall, big picture, and even the little things aside from that, I've been impressed with what Paul Maurice has done. And so far, things are flowing quite well.
Okay, as the last night, your thoughts on the game. You had the perspective of a fan, so your perspective may have had a couple more beers involved in it than ours did, but I think that probably made the game a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, thanks again, guys, for giving me the night off last night. But, you know, we touched on it at the beginning of the show here. It wasn't a very entertaining game. My New Jersey Devils aren't looking good right now. They've been playing 500 hockey really the whole year, and you had Adam Henrique come back and from an injury, and I thought at times he looked good and other times he didn't look very good. I thought really the first line was by far the best line, and you'd expect that line of Zajac, Camilleri, and Jágr to be the best line. Camilleri himself had an injury earlier this season, but you know, you talk about the game as a whole, and it really did feel like the Jets were playing kind of a road style on home ice, and that's the type of hockey that this team is playing, certainly since the first 5 games of the year, and they're playing a very patient game. They're taking, you know, their opportunities and capitalizing on those opportunities, guys. But, you know, you talk about the way Michael Hutchinson played, and he was very close to getting a shutout. I mean, that goal, it just barely crossed the line. We all saw it, and, you know, Bo Bogo tried to, you know, bat it out of there, and it just barely crossed the line.
Devils also hit two posts, so I mean, it is, you know, fair to say that even though the goal that they scored wasn't the best of them, they did hit two posts, including Camilleri towards the end of the game. Yep. There, that would have been a real sort of back-breaking goal had the Jets given up that lead.
Yeah, and I mean, posts are going to happen in a lot of games, and you saw the Jets hit posts in the game that they played in Newark.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's part of hockey, and I think the Jets were the better team last night. They deserved to win, and you know, you talk about the way that they've played, and especially against a team like the New Jersey Devils. You know, you watch the Devils, they've got four defensemen under the age of 24. Bryce Salvador is out of the lineup. With Bryce Salvador in the lineup, this is a team that looks slow out there. And you talk about guys like Zubris. You talk about guys like Michael Ryder. Michael Ryder has had a great career, a great sniper. But you look at this Devils team as a whole, their possession is way down. And that was something, you know, that the advanced stats crowd was looking at last year. Devils not making the playoffs, but they still had those good possession numbers. That's really not looked good this year. And I thought Adam Larson struggled. He's had kind of one good game, one bad game. He's really lacked consistency. That's why he's been in and out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. He was a healthy scratch a lot earlier in the season, Pete DeBoer. But back to the way the Jets are playing, guys, you look at it, and they're still picking up points. They're still getting the job done. They're getting the job done on the road and at home. And with two really difficult games coming up against Detroit, who's playing really well, with or without Datsyuk, and then you've got the St. Louis Blues, one of the hottest teams in the Western Conference. They always seem to be one of the hottest teams in the Western Conference. Yeah. It's good to beat a team that you should beat right now.
The Blues are just good. I mean, that's one thing. You know, you mentioned Jersey quickly. I'll mention on Jersey there. I thought the Iger, Zajac, and Camilleri line was the best line. But yeah, you make a very good point in terms of foot speed. They just don't have it. So their game is, the Jets were able to skate them into where they wanted them to go. Damon Severson, quickly, very good. Looked extremely, I was extremely impressed with what I saw with him yesterday.
If they were picking the Calder Trophy candidates, and I know he hasn't quite put up the points, Richie, that he was earlier. He's got 8 or 9 points or whatever it is. But you'd have to still think that he'd be one of the candidates. Obviously, Gaudreau is in there, and you know, you'd have to put in Philip Forsberg, obviously. But as far as defensemen go, I mean, he's one of their top defensemen now.
He's logging big minutes.
He is.
This is Damon Severson that we're talking about at the Devils. He played 22:56 last night for the Devils, and he played over 3.5 minutes shorthanded ice time.
It's their best defenseman last night.
Not saying much.
No, he was good.
I know he was good, but their goals, defense isn't great.
But their goals weren't, I mean, you know, it wasn't like the goals the Jets scored were going around guys, embarrassing them. You know, as the Eric Jelena there too, there's some, you know, you mentioned Adam Larson, and you think about the Devils being kind of an older team, but now Severson kind of comes out of nowhere here. Jelena is a recent draft pick. Larson hasn't been what they expect him to be. Those are three guys under the age of 25, and they give you a little bit more promise because the Devils team is this old and kind of aimless, it appears. So there's a little bit of vision there, Schneider in between the pipes. You can kind of see where it's going now. And that's just what I'll say about the Devils. The Jets, you mentioned Detroit and St. Louis. Tough matchups, but St. Louis is that. That's the barometer.
It's an in-division matchup.
Just the quality of competition.
And it made extra important because they are an in-division rival.
Yes.
And those games are, I mean, that's where the Jets really struggled last year, is playing the games in division.
Well, and if you want to talk about barometer games, and we've seen at least two. I mean, earlier in the season, of course, they lost to L.A. That's a barometer, obviously, against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Weren't successful, and Hutch was pulled during that game, Richie, but you've played Chicago, you've beat Chicago, you got lucky against Chicago, talking about posts and all that. Hutchinson played very well, but they've beat Chicago, and they got a point against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that was another game that we were talking about being kind of a game where you have to beat the best team in the Eastern Conference, or at least one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, Montreal, Tampa, I guess, are in that conversation too. But you're going to play a St. Louis Blues team that you've had trouble with every year, and especially since the Jets moved over to the Western Conference. The St. Louis Blues are one of those teams, like the Chicago Blackhawks, they can easily beat you 2-1 just as easily as they can beat you 5-1. And the way Tarasenko is playing for the St. Louis Blues and the way their goaltending has been all year, that was always a question mark. So that's absolutely going to be a difficult game to win, as is Detroit. And we talked about this you know, as we were previewing the season, Drew. Every year it seems like Detroit is going to be picked as this is the year they're going to miss the playoffs. And you look at them and they're 6th in the Eastern Conference, even without Datsyuk. And, you know, they won again last night, shutting out the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are decimated by injuries. But still, it's a lot of skill on that team.
Well, Babcock is the best coach in the league, I think, and that team's always prepared.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we will talk more about the Detroit Red Wings ahead of their visit to the MTS Center tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Little birdie told me Remus had a nice dinner there on Monday.
Really?
Matzo ball soup.
Ah. Yeah, Remus was spotted.
Jewish penicillin, as it's also colloquially known as. How was that? Was it a good dinner, Rem?
Corned beef sandwich, matzo ball soup. It was great. I had a great dinner.
Jets in the the Jets in the Red Wings tomorrow night at MTSN.
Sorry,
what was that?
I got that, Rem.
And pickles.
Oh, and pickles.
Yeah, right?
That's the commercial, right? Jets and the Red Wings tomorrow night, and you know, it's just, I like when the Red Wings come to town. They're one of the special teams in the NHL, even though we just don't see them very much. Because obviously they're in the East, but they are one of the original six teams, and it's always a little bit more special and a little bit more of a buzz in the building when they come. But I really don't remember any of the other times that they've shown up. They've been at MTS Center so far. I just don't think there has been the Jets and the Red Wings haven't played really any memorable games in the last few years.
It's only been one though, right? Because the first year. Every team was only playing each other once, and the Jets played in Detroit, and they got blown out, if I recall. The second year was lockout, and so they only played in the Eastern Conference, right?
And Detroit
the Rings
were
still in the West.
Last
year they played only once, and I believe it was only one game. And then
why would they only play one game last year?
Because one game in the conference here, and game in the conference
here. And I don't have any recollection of the Jets-Red Wings game from last season, is sort of what I was saying.
I believe the Jets won in December. If I recall correctly. In any event, true. I do agree with you that we're talking about original six team carries a lot more cachet. The crowd, you'll see Wings jerseys tomorrow. I mean, yesterday you saw one Colorado Rockies jersey.
You'll see some Gordie Howe jerseys too.
Yes, that'd be great. But the Wings, you know, the original six teams have a following that's, you know, way before when the Winnipeg Jets came into town in 1972. So it will be a little more excitement in the building. Mike Babcock and the Wings. I mean, the Wings have some great players too. A lot of young players that people may not know about here. Now, it's no Nicholas Lidstrom, Brendan Shanahan, Stevie Yzerman, and those days are gone, but there's still a lot of cachet, and they play a great... What they play, it's kind of like the Devils play with speed. It's very similar. Devils are playing a puck possession kind of game, making plays, but they don't have the speed to create enough. So, to Ezzy's point in the first segment.
Yeah, nothing has changed, Richie, from the team that won the Stanley Cup in 2008. Sure, you've lost Lidstrom, you've lost Rafalski and all that, but you've still got Zetterberg and Datsyuk. We're not sure if Datsyuk's... We'll have to ask Ken Daniels.
He's making the trip to Winnipeg.
We'll have to ask him if he's going to play tomorrow. Yeah. He's had groin problems. Datsyuk's had a lot of injury problems over the years.
I think Jets fans would be happy if he didn't play. I mean, despite the fact you don't get to see one of the best players that's played the game, but they'd be happy in terms of winning in the game to not have Pavel Datsyuk around.
The Detroit Red Wings have a lot of skill too, and you know, you look at some of the guys that have come in over the last couple of years, Richie, Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Tatar, both guys that came up through Grand Rapids, and Thomas Yurko just got his first NHL goal last night versus Columbus. So you look at some of the players they have, you know, in that lineup, and it's still a very dangerous team. And I know Brendan Smith just went down with an injury, so they called up Xavier Ouellette, so they're going to be missing Brendan Smith. But that defense is still pretty good. And I really like Nicholas Cronwall, obviously. He plays a lot for them. And Danny DeKeyser, who was coached under Andy Murray, very good defenseman. So this is a tough team. This is a very good team, and the Jets are going to have to, you know, win the 5-on-5 battle. It's not necessarily a team that's going to kill you on the power play, but it's a good team, good defense, good goaltending, and as you mentioned, the best coach possibly of this generation.
Offensively, they are still led by their top line of Henrik Zetterberg. He's got the most points on the team with 17, 4 goals and 13 assists so far. Mm-hmm. Just under a point a game for Zetterberg. Also playing with him is Gustav Nyquist and Johan Franzen. Nyquist with 12 points and Franzen also with 12 points so far this year.
There's a little contrast there. Franzen's, you know, he's never been the fastest skater, but he's slowed down a bit over the years, and Nyquist does everything really quickly. Exceptionally skilled. People are going to be very impressed with Gustav Nyquist. He can stick handle in a phone booth. You can make quick decisions. You can score. You can pass. He's a very good player.
Another one of those late round Swedish players that only the Red Wings seem to be able to develop. Nyquist drafted fourth in the fourth round, 121st overall in 2008.
Given great time to develop, as you mentioned, Drew. Detroit has a very good penalty kill, like the Jets. They're third overall, Winnipeg's sixth. And their power play is middle of the pack at around 15, they're 14. So, you know, in terms
top five in both Corsi and Fenwick, if you want to look at the advanced stats.
That was at the puck.
Sure.
And you're talking about a team that has had injuries so far this year, too. And Babcock, if you remember last year's 24-7, Babcock scratching out players on that board and on the whiteboard, injury, doesn't care. He wants to know who's in the room. That's it. That's all he wants to know. So it's going to be a test. You know, you mentioned that, Drew. It's going to be a test for sure. They're over 50% on the faceoffs. They do the little things well. Well-coached teams generally do the little things very well.
So how do you see the matchups? The Jets are going to be are on home ice. Obviously, they get last change, which is slightly to their advantage. How do you see Paul Maurice deploying his troops and trying to match up against the Red Wings?
Well, I think you're going to try and get Cronwall's. If you're Mike Babcock, you're going to try and get Cronwall out there against Little Ladd and Wheeler. That's going to be the matchup that you want. Let's see if Brendan Smith will be an issue there, but you think DeKeyser and Quincy probably out against the Jets' second line. So I think that would be Perreault, Kane, and Byfuglien. The question is Scheifele, Frolik, and Fraley, if they're as effective as they were yesterday, then you're working Ouellette, Lash off those guys that the injuries allow for some matchup problems for the Jets to create. Now, that doesn't mean if you're Detroit, you can't create your own matchup problems, and which they can. I mean, you know, do you trust the line of... Is it going to be Riley Sheahan, Tatar, and Ablicator? Is that going to be considered the second line? And then is Darren Helm, Cleary, you know, Yurkom's going based on the lines they've been lately. Darren Helm will kill you with speed. He's St. Andrews boy. I mean, Manitoba people know that. Yurko is, as he mentioned. So these teams are actually pretty similar. Jets more physical. Jets have become more physical lately, too. But Jets more physical. And Jets are meaner than they have been in the past, for sure. And so the Jets will try and use that to their advantage. But one thing you can't do is, while they're only, and obviously Datsyuk's a huge factor. He changes everything there.
Well, that's just it. If Datsyuk ends up playing, and in my mind, they played in Columbus last night. So if Datsyuk is rejoining the team in Winnipeg, and that's what the reports are, to me, that's a fairly good indicator he might be back in the lineup tomorrow night.
Yeah, there's a good chance. And whenever you put a future Hall of Famer on the ice,
it makes a difference. It
makes a huge difference. And that's going to create matchup problems, and the forward lines will switch around a little bit. Look at this Detroit Red Wings team, and they're not big, but wow, do you have speed at every position. You have, I know Richie really likes Riley Sheahan. He really established himself last year. You know, his offensive totals aren't maybe yet where he wants to be, but he's still young at 22 years old. But this Detroit Red Wings plays the same old system that they've played, as we mentioned, 10 years ago, really. And there's tons of skill there. I was talking about Justin Abdelkader last week. Just guys, they fight for pucks. They're gritty. It's a tough team to play against. It really is. And they can burn you. And, you know, watching the highlights of Henrik Zetterberg, I mean, the guy just, he always seems to be involved in all of their goals. And, you know, as you mentioned, Drew, if Datsyuk comes back, it's just another weapon that they can rely on.
Jimmy Howard will not get the start for the Red Wings.
The
and
monster.
Jonas Gustafsson is on IR, so it's going to be Peter Mrazek getting the start for the Red Wings tomorrow night.
And I know nothing about him. So if I would tell you about him, I'd be lying.
Right. But, I mean, really what you're looking at, this is a guy that they probably expected to start the year in Grand Rapids.
They did expect, not probably.
As the so you're facing a guy that the Red Wings, you know, granted he might, you know, we know how long the Red Wings take to develop their young talent. So I don't know that his ceiling is an AHL ceiling. It probably isn't. He's only 22 years old.
No. They have expectations for him. They just want to slowly bring him along, as you said.
Right. So Mrazek gets the start for the Red Wings tomorrow night against the Jets. That'll be interesting.
It'd be feeling out process too there, Drew, when you don't play teams, as you mentioned, the teams haven't played each other much. So you go by the scouting report more than anything, and then usually sometimes you get into it in that second period after they've felt each other out a bit. And the truth is, both skating teams, you might see a lot of out perimeter play, put it that way. These teams aren't going to be absolutely crashing the net at all opportunities.
Yeah, Mrazek, 22 years old. He's played 9 games for the Red Wings last year. You know, and... for the Jets, I don't think your approach changes that much. Maybe, if anything, you know less about him, and you can't really plan because you've only seen a little bit in the NHL. And for the most part, numbers are good in the Grand Rapids, though.
Facing a goaltender, and I mean, it's, if you're a player, you're a forward, and you're facing a goaltender that you really don't know much about, you don't have much of a scouting report on him, is that to your advantage or your detriment, you think?
You read the scouting report, you go based on that, and then you go based on what you see in the game. That's all. They'll tell them the 3-4 spots they can go after him. And, you know, you hear the players say, create traffic, make it simple. I mean, the same old cliches. That's all they'll do. You read the scouting report, and then you see what he gives you in the first period. It's like similar to a batter coming in facing a pitcher he hasn't seen before. He'll read the report. What does the guy throw? He'll get up there. He'll feel him out the first at bat or two, and then you'll see.
Yeah, and it's possible Paul Maurice and his coaching staff, maybe Pascal Vincent, Charlie Huddy, Wade Flaherty, of course, the goalie coach, sees something in video, and he tells, they have a pre-meeting, and he tells them, you know, something about his glove. We haven't seen him, so we don't know if he's good on his glove. I'm just saying as an example, and potentially they try to exploit that, but I think for the most part, your game plan doesn't change much, knowing it's still the same team in front of Peter Mrazek, and that's a good team.
Yeah, good numbers from Mrazek last year. Like you said, as he played 9 games for the Red Wings last year, started 6 of them. The win-loss record isn't anything to write home about, but you can't. There's nothing to be embarrassed about with a 1.74 goals against average and a .927 save percentage.
Drew, I don't think if you're the Jets, you're thinking that's something that you can take advantage of, just for the simple fact that time after time, for example, last year, Carter Hutton came in. I believe that was his NHL debut, and he only let in 1 goal, and the Nashville Predators beat the Jets. I forget what the exact score was, but I remember that was Carter Hutton's first game from Thunder Bay, of course. So I don't think you want to look at a guy and say, well, this guy's an AHL goalie, so we're going to put 5 pucks past him.
He's from the Czech Republic, so there's a Czech Republic goaltender on the Winnipeg Jets side that he might know something about him that could provide a bit of a scouting report.
Well, if he's anything like the Czech Republic goaltender that won the Stanley Cup with the Red Wings, I think the Jets are in trouble.
Yeah, some guy named Hasek, new Hockey Hall of Fame inductee. Let's head to break. When we come back, Ken Daniels, Red Wings play-by-play voice, is going to join us. You're listening to the NHL Midweek live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the show, he's the Detroit Red Wings play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Detroit, Ken Daniels. Ken, good evening, and thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, anytime.
Ken, we want to obviously brought you on to talk about the Red Wings ahead of their game tomorrow night in Winnipeg against the Jets. Going to start with Pavel Datsyuk. As a an interested observer, should I read anything into the fact that Datsyuk didn't travel to Columbus, but he is traveling to Winnipeg ahead of tomorrow night's game?
You mean that he likes Winnipeg better than Columbus?
Regarding him possibly being back in the lineup.
No, it's the weather, Drew.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Columbus was cold. I don't think there was any difference in weather in Columbus and weather here, to tell you the truth. I experienced both. No, I think Pavel is a groin issue. He was on the plane with us, so he's here. And as far as I know, he's expected to play. And because Red Wings put Andre Nestor still on waivers today because Stephen Weiss is down in Grand Rapids, going to try and go this weekend again. So as far as I know, Pavel's ready to go, and he's like a thoroughbred, and if he doesn't feel he's 100%, he doesn't want to risk any further damage. He's had enough of that in the past, so I think that was probably why he figured get the extra day's rest and not play in Columbus. And as it turns out, the Red Wings have done pretty well without him this year. They're 5-1-2 without him, which says something how the other guys dig in deep when Pavel's not there.
Ken, we're told that Peter Mrazek's going to get the start in net for Detroit, and we were talking about him last segment before we had you on, and aside from knowing that he played a little bit with Detroit, we don't know too much about him aside from his numbers, as we mentioned in Grand Rapids were pretty good. Can you give us a little bit more of a scouting report on Peter Mrazek?
Well, I'd say he's competitive, first of all. He's a great puck mover, probably the best in the organization, because it's not Jimmy Howard's forte is puck moving, that's for sure. So for Peter Mrazek, he's probably the best they got. So he really helps move it for the defense, sets it up very well. He's just got natural athletic ability. He's theatrical at times. We saw that when he's outstanding in Alberta, 2012 for the Czech Republic, he had a 52-save win over the U.S., knocked out the U.S., knocked the USA of the regulation round at that time. He's just a jovial kid who thinks he should be in the NHL 2 years ago. And that, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. He thinks he should be there, but like Jimmy Howard, who spent 4 years in Grand Rapids, this is his fourth year. So he's out of options after this year, and that's why the Red Wings signed Jonas Gustafsson to a one-year deal, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent end of the season because the Red Wings know Peter Mrazek will be up to back up Jimmy Howard next year and maybe even challenge him for playing time, and that will come from Mrazek because he's just that type of kid.
Ken, Gustav Nyquist in a coming out party last year, 48 points, 57 games, and great hands and really great skill. What's been the difference, if there has been one, from this season as compared to last year?
Well, I think he's probably getting more closely watched this year, although he's still scoring. Last year, the coaching staff wanted him to shoot a little bit more, and he did that. He had over an 18% shooting percentage, so it was pretty darn good, and things just started going for him. You remember last year, he didn't start the season with the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. He was in Grand Rapids only because of a numbers game. There's a numbers crunch, and had nobody else to send down, and it was the same deal this year where only Yurko could go down. But somehow he survived last year with the numbers game. Nyquist couldn't do it. So when he came up to Detroit, he only had one goal his first 18 games. It took him a little while. But this is a guy who was a Hobey Baker finalist each of his final two college seasons. He led the nation in scoring at Maine in the 09-10 season as a sophomore. And he put up something like nearly 150 points in 113 NCAA games. So in the American Hockey League, he was almost leading the league, I think he was, when the Red Wings called him up. So he scored at every level. So it shouldn't be a shock that he'd do it at the NHL, not necessarily leading the league by any stretch, but in time he'd get there. So I think last year he maybe surprised some that it happened so quickly, and now others are watching him, but I'd still say he's off to a pretty darn good start this year, for sure. I mean, he's not doing too badly. Still has 8 goals, leads the team. So he's doing pretty well. He scored his 9th goal, I think, last night. So pretty good start for him, too, but I just think guys are watching him a little more closely.
Ken, don't want to jinx it at all. Obviously, Darren Helm is back and healthy. He's played 18 games this year. He's had injury troubles the past couple of years, and many fans, of course, know about him, being from St. Andrews here close to Winnipeg. How has he played thus far, and how much of a factor has his speed been in the Red Wings' ability to forecheck?
Well, first of all, I don't think you can say anything that's going to jinx Darren Helm. I think Darren Helm's had so much go wrong over the years, I don't think it matters anymore. But you just hope that he can stay healthy. And his speed hasn't been that much of a factor this year, and that's by his own admission. He knows he's a half step behind, but that's to be expected. He missed all preseason and camp, and the issues that he's had with injuries, and was hit with a puck early right away in the preseason or in practice. So he's just had a lot of issues get going, but I think the goal last night, even though it wasn't a huge goal in the sense of a 5-0 victory, it was the 5th goal, but I think just for him, it was confidence just to get something to go in. He's had some chances. He hasn't been able to finish. He can still be a factor, just his speed, but he really still has to get up the speed, and that'll come, and that'll just come with playing time. And I think also last night it helped him, too, with Pavel being out of the lineup. He's been able to go from wing back to center. And he was pretty good on draws last night, too, so you don't want to get him too much out of sync there. But I think Darren, when he can freewheel a little bit, he'd been playing on the wing with Sheahan and Tatar, and with Datsyuk out, he went back into the middle. And actually, it was a pretty good line last night with Cleary and Yurko. Yurko scored a goal. Cleary, a rare appearance in the lineup for him. But I think Darren, it's just a matter of time until he feels good about himself, and then he'll start to be more of a factor.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Our guest is Detroit Red Wings play-by-play broadcaster Ken Daniels. You can catch Red Wings games on Fox Sports Detroit.
Ken, coming into the season, you heard a lot about Mike Babcock's contract status. Obviously, that hasn't been any type of distraction. The team's doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it matters. I don't think the guys think about it whatsoever. And, people say, well, he's going to stay in Detroit. Why wouldn't he have signed already? I say he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Why would he? So, if the talk is out there, let people talk. He's going to see. I think the team's going to be competitive. They got terrific youngsters in Grand Rapids up and coming. Anthony Mantha, the best of the lot up front. But on defense, Xavier Ouellette was just called up today because Brendan Smith's going to go on IR. He's got a hand infection, so he'll be gone 7 days. So Xavier Ouellette's going to come up. He's one of those defensemen. Nick Jensen's another one. Alexei Marchenko, Ryan Sproul. all these kids are going to play in the National Hockey League, as far as our staff here in Detroit seem to think. So may not be top one or two, but certainly be able to play in a steady role in the NHL. So there's a lot of good kids where people say, well, Mike's going to go where, you know, you got the best chance to win. Well, if I look at Detroit's prospect up and coming, and then you all hear the talk in Toronto, I don't know. I think Detroit is a better chance to win, but a lot of it will come down to money, too. And that'll be a part of it. And, excuse me, why shouldn't it be for him? He's unrestricted, so go for it. And it just depends whether they can come to an agreement with the Red Wings. But I don't see anything happening right away. And if it plays out, it plays out.
You look at the young defense, Ken, that the Red Wings have, and a lot of talent there, Danny DeKeyser and Brendan Smith. Jakob Kindle's been a guy, expectations were maybe a little bit higher for him, and he hasn't really reached those expectations, and has been a little bit in Mike Babcock's doghouse. Why has he not maybe reached the levels that people expected for him a couple of years ago?
He's a good puck mover. I just think, you know, with his size at 6'2 and approaching 220, they just think he should be more physical, and he hasn't been, and I think that maybe irks some people, I guess. But that's a good question. You know, you run into every team, certain coaches like certain players, others don't, and you just get rubbed the wrong way, and you get in, as you say, the doghouse, and I guess he's been there and the door's been locked. So, you know, it's tough for him to get out of that. And, you know, even with Smith out, they call up Ouellette. I don't think it hurts to have 7D anyway, but Kindle was okay on the power play. He can move the puck well. I just think there's probably subtle things in the defensive part of the game that coaching staff will notice more than the average Joe will notice. Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter of time. You know, a high pick, but you know, I heard that you know, his name obviously was mentioned out there in the past, but they couldn't come to any sort of deal with him elsewhere, so he's still here for the time being, and when he gets his chance, he'll just have to go in there and do his best, I suppose.
Ken, I wanted to ask you about Justin Abdelkader. We do the segment called Three Things I Learned This Week. I guess it's called Six Things I Learned This Week. Three from me, three from Richie. About a month ago, I mentioned Justin Abdelkader. I've always been a big fan of his, and I know that, you know, up until this point in his career, maybe the offensive totals haven't been there for him, but, you know, he was playing on the top line there, and to me, it looks like he's really taking advantage of you know, that top six role, and he's starting, his offensive game is coming around. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. You know, even last year, and you know, he played a lot with Pavel Datsyuk last year, and Pavel loves playing with him. And, you know, as they say, he's a big body, he's heavy, and he's 220, and he'll get in there, he'll get the puck, he knows what his role is. He's a smart player. I called a lot of his games at Michigan State over the years that I was there. He's one of those guys, again, and more offensive upside than maybe someone like Drew Miller, who also played at Michigan State, funny enough. But I think when you look at the Red Wings team, and it's whether it be a fourth line or a third line, these guys can go up in the lineup. Maybe not all the time, and that's kudos to Abdelkader for being able to stay there with top players, doing his role and be able to chip in with some goals and be a net front presence on the power play that the Red Wings need. But that's always been the Red Wing system. The guys who are on the fourth line, you're not just fourth line thugs and fighting, et cetera. You can play on the fourth line. If you need to play on the second line, you can play there too. And Abdelkader's been able to do that. He can go fourth line, third line, great penalty killing, shot blocker. He's just a smart player. And, you know, when Zetterberg retires one day, I think Abdelkader will be a longtime Red Wing. And to me, when I look at them, it's either Cronwall or Abdelkader as the next captain of this team. I think he has that much respect and leadership ability as he gets older.
We talked about injury concerns. And last question for you here, Ken. Stephen Weiss is expected to play in Grand Rapids tomorrow. What's the expected timeline for him in terms of return to the lineup?
That's a good question. I don't even think he knows. You know, he was in a lot of pain last time, went down, played one game in Grand Rapids, thought he could play two but couldn't, and it was just a shooting pain. So he's had the surgery. We just don't know where it's going to go right now, and it's just a bit of an issue in that to get him down there. Although hindsight's 20/20, it happened with Brendan Smith after the fact. But you know, Andre Nestor still had to go on waivers. Whether somebody picks him up remains to be seen. But the Red Wings liked him for the time, but he's got to play, and they had to put him on waivers to make room for Steven to go down. But you know, a guy who's missed heading into this year, he missed 87 games the past 2 years.
Wow.
He's had a couple of hernia surgeries, only played 26 games last year, just has never been right. So you just hope he can get there, because they've invested a lot in him. You know, this is year number two of what was a 5-year deal and a 4.9 cap hit. So, wow. You know, they signed Stephen Weiss and they let Valtteri Filppula go. And Filppula probably got a little more money than the Red Wings wanted to pay, because, you know, Filppula can frustrate you for 20 games too, but he's certainly putting up a lot more points than Stephen Weiss mm-hmm. ever would have or has so far. So, you know, that was the rub there. And you hope that Stephen Weiss at least come back and play some hockey for this team. Otherwise, it looks even worse. But I wish him all the best because it's really been frustrating for him. And he's trying to get going. And the hernia surgery now, and they just let the last one heal. So hopefully this weekend, it's a big weekend for him. And I don't want to say, you know, it's a career weekend, but it could go away if he has another setback. I mean, who knows? Where do you go next? He's had so many opinions. So I really hope he comes through this pain-free and get back in the lineup and get back to playing again.
Ken Daniels is the Detroit Red Wings play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Detroit. Ken, appreciate the time. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Great show. Thanks very much.
Take care, Ken. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll discuss the World Cup of Hockey format.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Ken Daniels, Detroit Red Wings play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Detroit, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, news announced earlier this week in regards to the World Cup of Hockey, which is set to return in September of 2016. There have been two previous World Cups of Hockey. Of course, the predecessor to that was the Canada Cup and the Summit Series and all sorts of international tournaments along those lines. The news is as follows. Normally, there's about 8 countries participating in the tournament. According to Chris Johnson, there's going to be 6 countries this year: Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland, Russia, and the Czech Republic. Then the other two teams are reportedly going to be an all-star team made up of the best players from the remaining European countries, the best players from Slovakia, Switzerland, Latvia, Germany, Slovenia.
Terrible idea. Yeah.
And then the final team is supposedly going to be a combination of, quote, young stars in the NHL or in the sport of hockey. Your thoughts?
I think that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. I can't understand who comes up with these ideas. Like, who's in the boardroom and says, you know, I have a great idea for the World Cup of Hockey. We need to have countries play, and then a team of random countries, and then a team of young players. And then somebody else would say, I can't believe anybody in that room would say, that idea is worth talking about. Like, wasn't there not be a chorus of laughter?
There was a chorus of laughter when I read this.
Like, I don't understand, if you're talking about playing for your country and that whole idea, and you're trying to develop these countries and a following, how do you do that by having a team of 6 or 7 different nations? Like, think about it. We were talking about it during the break. Switzerland done an amazing job with their hockey program. Ralph Kruger from Manitoba has done a tremendous job there over the years, and Jonas Hiller and, you know, Roman Josi, and the talent that they've pushed out there, and they put out their Niederreiter, just name a few. Why don't they have a team? They give every team they play a run for their money. Sure, they play defensive, but look at the Jets. So they don't have the talent. They play defensive. So,
you talk to people in and around international hockey nowadays, and they would tell you that the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Russia, they're just not developing players at the same degree that they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Czech Republic is in there, though.
I know they're in there, but I'm saying, why is the Czech Republic in there but not Switzerland?
It's a good point, Drew, in terms of who's developing them now. And look at the win that Slovenia had in the Olympics, right? And the performance there. And Andrei Kopitar there. You develop a following by being successful, or at least putting out a team that people can follow. If anything, I would have... The tournament used to have, if I recall correctly, kind of a qualifying round.
They did. This year they said there's not enough time for the qualifying round. That was
why? Because they need more. Now, I just want to make sure, and I don't think it was in any of the articles that I read, are they talking about having this tournament like before training camp?
September 2016.
Right.
So it's hard to say exactly when the tournament would be.
My point is you should have this during training camp because nobody cares about training camp. Exhibition games are a ripoff. They're a waste of money.
Well, Richie, for those players that are playing in the World Cup, that would be their training camp.
Exactly. That's what I mean. So, I mean, the exhibition games are a ripoff because the guys aren't going full throttle, and I don't blame them. They shouldn't be. But the point is let the guys play in the exhibition games where you want to evaluate talent anyways and play it longer. And by that, I mean have more teams at the beginning.
Here's
and
the
even
quote.
Have a series at the end. You know, not just a best of three, but a best of three, then a best of five. Make this better. Make this interesting. Make this unique.
Organizers looked at staging a pre-tournament qualifier to determine the final two spots, the final two countries.
And half those, by the way, way more than half those players, even if they're playing in the KHL, if they're not going to boycott the KHL, which starts different season start times. But if they're NHL guys, I mean, so you have two, three guys missing camp. Who cares?
Sure. But they don't believe there is time to pull everything together. I'm not sure how there's time to pull the tournament together, but not a pre-tournament that would start a week ahead of time or 2 weeks ahead of time or 3 weeks ahead of time. You're talking, you got a year and a half. You got almost 2 years to pull this thing together.
I don't understand. I just, this idea can be, Ezzie, this can be a great tournament.
I think it's a useless tournament.
Oh, I see. I disagree. I think you can make this unique. You can make it, unlike the Olympics, you can make it series. You can create rivalries, best of threes, best of fives. You could do all those things. And instead, they're just trying to make this a generic moneymaker.
I absolutely don't think it's useless. I think in 2004 it was because they didn't follow through with it. And we didn't know where it was going. So I can maybe see that argument, Drew. But if you're a hockey fan, you're going to love this because
I'm
it's
not.
Best.
The Olympics happened months ago. All of a sudden, if we lose in 2016, if Canada loses in 2016 to a team of, I don't know, young stars,
that's
I'm going
different.
To care?
That's different. But Euro and World Cup are every 2 years, and all the European nations seem to care about both of those.
Well, hold on here. Your argument is if you're not a fan of the World Cup, I'm not. And nothing
my
I
argument
say
is do either the Olympics
you.
Or the World Cup. Don't do both.
They are going to do both.
I know, and I don't like it.
Well,
that's my argument.
That's a personal opinion, but you know
it's too much.
Because,
it waters it down.
But, okay, that's fine. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, and I think you know I love hockey. I'll watch a pond hockey game, so
sure.
I'll be excited for it. But Drew, back to the you know this format. I think if anything, the only positive I can see with this, I guess there's a couple of positives about you know this notion of having a couple of all-star teams. I don't like the idea. I'm with Richie. I think you put Switzerland in there, and you put maybe Germany or Slovakia. If those countries,
Slovakia's in, right?
Nope,
Slovakia's not in.
So if those three countries, Richie, have to compete,
that's right.
If they have to play a round, a best of three, like a little mini tournament, fine, do that. And the whole time thing. I mean, the tournament's in a year and a half, so don't give me that. That's ridiculous.
It's almost 2 years. It's September 26th.
And play those games in Europe.
So sure. As far as this goes, the only thing that I can see that's good about this, obviously, we've never seen this before, so it's creative, but. Who cares?
It's not.
If
they're making a joke of the tournament by having these all-star teams, I'm not treating it seriously as a fan because they're not treating it seriously as an organizing body.
I agree with that. This tournament better not have all-star teams and a young kids team because then I don't take it seriously. I agree with Drew. But if the only teams are nations, then I'm into it, and I will watch it. But I'm not watching Team Canada play against a bunch of all-stars from different countries.
Well, no. What happened? The all-stars could be from Canada.
Well, if they're young enough, they didn't make the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous. But even the team of Kopitar and Vanek and all that. No. It's one country. This is not like the Olympics. They put together teams from... Oh, I'm going to put together an all-star team of guys who aren't in this tournament. It's not that way it works.
Are they going to call them the European Union? I mean, I don't. It's just that makes it a ridiculous tournament in my mind. Sorry, Ezzie, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say too. I mean, you look at the inclusion factor, and that would mean that, for example, Slovenia wouldn't play, but a guy like Andrzej Kopitar could play. So, in that sense, you're including more countries. But back to the format here as a whole. If you're not going to continue, and I think. You'd hope that the World Cup of Hockey is going to be something every 4 years. As we mentioned, there's been two, one in 96, 2004, and then there's been 12 years between tournaments. So for me, as a hockey fan, I'd like this to be every 4 years and to know that
if they're
going to go with the All-Star format, they're going to stay with that. So not one year they have the All-Star team and then 1 year they decide to switch it. You got to be consistent.
I agree.
And I think, Drew, you know, back to the point, I think there are going to be some people that are similar in your thinking that they're really only going to be more interested in the Olympics because there's more at stake and all of that. But with the World Cup of Hockey, you have to go with nations. And, you know, there's a chance they will go with these all-star teams, but it's difficult to be excited when there's less of a chance that those teams are going to be successful. Because then you're talking about, okay, now you're putting together this rookie team. How much time are they going to actually have to play? Are they going to have three practices, four practices? They're going to get smoked by Canada, the U.S., or Russia.
What? 72, 76, 81, 87, 91, 84, 2. There's a somewhat of a consistency there, in a 3-4 year gap, but I agree with Ezzy 100%. Create a tradition and follow it.
Yes.
Stop fighting over it because there's money and there's law. Just get something in place that people can expect, know when to expect it. We know when the Olympics is going to be. We'll then know when the World Cup's going to be. You can maybe tweak it a bit, but not change it too much. 100% agree with Ezzy.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Canadian Press is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the national hockey reporter for the Canadian Press, Stephen Wino. Stephen, good evening and thanks for joining us.
Good evening. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
That's good. Now, but as we gather, we're going to go sort of around the NHL and talk about everything that's going on so far as we're in and around the 20-game mark for most teams. Can you update us on the angry mob outside of the Air Canada Centre? Have they lit anything on fire, or are they just chanting at this point in time?
They've put their pitchforks away for now. The torches are still lit. They haven't actually lit anything on fire yet, but they're ready to do so if the losses keep piling up.
Okay, well, that's good to know that the things are still safe in Toronto. You know, a dangerous scene, of course. Yeah, obviously, you've got to start there with last night's debacle against the Predators, followed by Saturday's debacle in Buffalo against the Sabres. You know, where do the Leafs go from here? You know, how do they bounce back from these two defeats, or is this the beginning of a downward spiral for the rest of the season? Because really, when you look at their record so far, they're probably about where most people would figure they would be.
And they are, and that's the weird part, is they're right outside of that playoff picture in the Eastern Conference. But when you get embarrassed like that over a stretch of multiple games, it begins to start to look like the beginning of something much worse. And I went ahead a little bit because Joffrey Lupul is injured, David Booth is injured. This is not a full team, but everybody in the NHL is dealing with some kind of injury, so you don't want to use an excuse. But the way you lose like this, and not to the best teams in the NHL, but just to kind of teams, the worst of the Buffalo Sabres, and then a team in Nashville that's more known for keeping pucks out of the net than putting them in, and you start to wonder, even the stuff that the Leafs players are being asked out loud, but kind of really almost can't answer, are you planning to get your coach fired? And I don't even think it's a conscious thing. I really don't. But if you don't like a person as your boss, you're not going to maybe perform as well as you might. And when you start to see play like that, you wonder really... I mean, you wonder what changes have to come, because other than trades, I don't know what else this team can do right now.
You know, Stephen, there's a lot of excited Jets fans right now in Winnipeg with the way the team's been playing right now. Seventh in the West, big win against the New Jersey Devils. And again, in your answer, you don't have to be pro-Winnipeg just because this is a Winnipeg show. But when you look at that Western Conference, in all seriousness, you have a lot of teams that are surprising. You can start with Calgary and Winnipeg and Nashville. But to you, what team do you think is for real, and what team do you think is bound to fall off here in the West?
I think the Vancouver Canucks are closer to being real than any of these other teams, and maybe the Nashville Predators as well. But the success that the Vancouver Canucks were able to have before John Tortorella tells you that they're still a playoff contending team. And without the goalie drama that they had with Roberto Luongo and with Corey Schneider, and Ryan Miller may not be a top 5 or 10 goaltender in the league anymore, but he's brought stability back to that position, and there's still a lot of talent there. You could argue Nick Bonino for Ryan Kessler is almost an even move, and you get a guy like Lucas Pisa who's been in and out of the lineup too. But I think that team is a solid, probably a playoff team. The Nashville Predators have the kind of talent that you think could stay in there if Pekka Rinne stays healthy. The Jets and the Calgary Flames are both question marks to me, because you wonder if it's sustainable based on how great of goaltending they've gotten. And that really is the question, because the Toronto Maple Leafs did this last year. Their goaltending was so good in a playoff spot. Jonathan Bernier gets hurt and everything kind of falls apart like a house of cards. And not saying that's going to happen with Jonas Hiller or with Andrei Pavlich, but for both of those teams, they're playing maybe above the talent level. It's hard to judge based on preseason expectations, because sometimes we have no idea what we're talking about. But it seems like both those teams are playing above their talent level, with coaches who know how to get the most out of their talent. So I don't know that either of those teams are going to fall as far back in the pack as maybe some of us thought at the start of the season. But I don't know that they're in the top maybe 7 or 8 teams in that Western Conference. It is tough out there.
Steven, you wrote a really good article about Pat Burns and his induction into the Hall of Fame, and his family, his son and wife, being there to accept that honor. Can you touch on maybe how well respected Pat Burns was around the hockey community?
Really respected, because he won wherever he went. And the most stirring line to me about Lynn Burns' speech was in Montreal and in Boston and New Jersey. He taught players how to win. And then in the unhealthy Pat, when he was battling cancer, kind of taught everybody how to live. But he was respected as a hockey man for a long period of time, because he didn't have to stay in one place. He was able to kind of go to a team and turn things around immediately, and was good at doing that. Won Jack Adams in 3 different places, and then won a Stanley Cup in a place he wasn't Coach of the Year with the New Jersey Devils. So he managed to win in so many places, and there is a certain amount of outrage, whether you think it's justified or not, that this didn't happen while he was alive. And I still, if this would have happened in 2010 when he was still alive, I still think the same people would have said the same good things about him.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Steven Wino of the Canadian Press, talking about the NHL through, give or take, the first quarter of the season. Steven, you look at these top scorers in the NHL, and to no one's surprise, Sidney Crosby's there. But tied with Sidney Crosby is Jakub Voracek of the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, how surprised are you that he's been able to both have this very impressive start to the season and keep it going through, you know, the first 16 games or so for the Flyers?
Very surprised that he's at this level. I mean, Jake Voracek he's probably one of the more underrated players in the NHL, and has blossomed into a great winger playing with Claude Giroux. And it's one of those situations, is he a great winger because he's playing with Claude Giroux, or is Claude Giroux better because he's playing with a guy like Jake Voracek? And we're starting to see maybe it's a little bit of both, that Claude Giroux is clearly a very talented player, but Jake Voracek can do it on his own. I don't know that he's going to be in the scoring race all year. It is tough for a winger to be able to do that the way he's been able to do it. A lot of assists, not a whole lot of goals. He's not a pure goal scorer, maybe like a Phil Kessel is. But, I mean, he's certainly getting the kind of recognition now that maybe people in Philadelphia started to see, and even the people in Columbus started to see a few years ago.
Steven, you wrote about this for the Canadian Press yesterday, I believe it was, about Marty Brodeur and how he still wants to play, and you mentioned that he really doesn't have much interest in playing for Canada at the Spengler Cup, but really there's a shortage of NHL goaltending jobs. Do you think there's any chance that Marty catches on with the team, or do you think that he should maybe just decide to retire at this point?
I think he's got an uphill climb. I think it's really tough. There's no reason for him to kind of give it up. If he wants to keep skating and keep his hopes up, he's got all the right in the world, I think, to do that. I wouldn't be betting on him. I wouldn't be placing a bet right now to say that Martin Brodeur is going to wind up on an NHL roster this season. There are a handful of situations around the league. Look at Dallas and their backup goaltending situation. Anders Lindback has not been very good. The Colorado injury situation, the Avalanche decided it certainly wasn't worth going to the Brodeur well with Varlamov and Ray Dobera coming back from injury. But I don't know that there are a whole lot of landing spots for him. But if he keeps skating and stays in shape for a couple of months, I mean, personally, I think maybe Spengler Cup might make a lot of sense, but it's bad timing for himself with the holidays and Christmas and wanting to spend some time with his family. Unless there's a trade around the league, if a James Reimer or somebody else gets moved and opens up a spot for him, I do think it's going to be tough for him.
Brian Burke, Stephen, go.
Brian Burke, Brian Burke likes to talk. He does, and he held his annual primetime sports management over the last 2 days, and he doesn't really like us very much. He's like, well, most of them are okay. I'm like, all right, we still love you, Brian. Like, he's one of those guys where you put a quarter in, you get a quote out, you know he's going to be a great talker.
Yeah.
He's certainly got opinions on just about everything. I mean, I'm sure if we asked him about the Ukraine and how he felt about Vladimir Putin, he's got something to say about that. His views on the media obviously are well documented at this point, but he's also got a lot of friends in the media, and he likes being in the papers as much as he says he doesn't read it. He does like to talk, and we appreciate him doing that.
Does he know that he doesn't work for the Leafs anymore? It seems like the only thing he wants to talk about is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, the fun part is when he gets asked about it, he can't. A lot of executives on the league will say, "Oh, it's another team. I'm not going to touch them." Brian's not that way, and a good thing. Like he was passionate about his time with the Leafs and was here for a little while, and it's understandable why he feels that way and why he feels like he wants to weigh in on topics around the league, Leafs or otherwise.
Stephen, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the standings in the NHL, and you got three Eastern Conference teams right up there at the top. The Habs, obviously, first overall with 29 points, then the Lightning, then the Penguins. I know on this show, we tend to sort of disregard the East in thinking that they're not as good as Los Angeles and Chicago primarily, or the Ducks, you know, who are there right there with the Penguins, sort of the juggernauts that come out of the West. Is it possible that the East is getting disrespected throughout the NHL, that they actually might be better than we're giving them credit for?
Or that there are worse teams in the East that those teams are able to beat up on a little bit more. I don't want to discount the teams in the West, even though I think some of the best teams in the West right now are not performing up to expectations, and are maybe so good at what they do that they can flip a switch in February or March and be able to make the playoffs and kind of cruise. What these teams in the East, these three particular teams, are good at is they're great regular season teams, and we know what the Penguins have been able to do in the regular season for the past few years, what Tampa did last year before Ben Bishop got hurt in the playoffs. And Montreal showed it could make a playoff run before Carey Price got hurt. But these are teams that when there's the cream of the crop and then there's a lot of mediocrity below them, whereas in the West there's probably five or six teams that will be fighting for those spots. I don't know about disrespected. I certainly still think the Western Conference has a higher quality of play than the East.
Stephen Wino is the national hockey reporter for the Canadian Press. Stephen, we appreciate you giving us your time this evening.
Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Our pleasure, Stephen. Yeah, we'll do it again soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Stephen Wino for joining us to talk about the NHL in general as we reach the 20-game mark for the Winnipeg Jets. So most teams are inching their way up there. The Jets have played more games than a lot of other teams in the league. Got some fan reaction to Michael Remus earlier today. Remus, what did you think about the phone call? Somebody went out of their way to find the phone number of the station to call and tell you that you sucked.
No, they didn't call me to tell me I sucked. They called 780-1290, asked to speak to me, and Adam Toyer from H&L went and got me, and he told me I didn't know anything about hockey, and I go on the radio and act like I know everything.
Remus, now, Ezzy, do you have any regrets making that phone call?
No, I mean, everyone can have their opinions, but I mean, Remus is awesome, and he's a great asset to the station as well as being a friend. So I think that's pretty ridiculous. If this person has a problem with Remus, they have a problem with me.
Remus, get some music on about friendship in the background here.
I mean, the guy's reasoning was because I had never heard of a certain drill that he was referring to, and I don't even know.
Okay,
well, that's all I got.
Well, Remus, we got your back.
Thank you.
We do?
Well, Izzy and I do.
Oh, okay. I'll stab him in the back. How about
Let's
that?
Let's go here.
Okay. The Toronto Maple Leafs. There's a lot of backstabbing going on in that city, mm-hmm. given the play of the Maple Leafs for the last couple of games. 9-2 losers last night to the Predators. They lose to Buffalo. Which of those losses is worse, by the way? 9-2 to the Predators on home ice or 6-2 to the Sabres in Buffalo?
9-2 on home ice, but
yeah,
they're both pretty bad.
Yeah, I think 9-2 on home ice is pretty bad. And if you watch those last few goals, they mailed it in there. They couldn't wait to get off the ice. And both losses are pretty bad here, Drew. The goaltending hasn't been good. The defense hasn't been good. Phil Kessel, I mean, where do you start? I mean, we were talking to Stephen about this. Brian Burke was kind of defending Phil Kessel. There are a lot of problems with this team, and I don't know where you start.
Well, here's Phil Kessel talking about the unacceptable play over the last two games.
Pittsburgh, it was a close game, but these last two have been unacceptable. And we'll come prepared tomorrow, and we're gonna need more than this.
Nice that he spoke to the media. We'll get to that part in a couple minutes. But you know, where do the Leafs go from here? I mean, you know, you lose by a score of 15-4 in the last two games in the NHL. It's hard to do that. I mean, it's hard to play that undisciplined in this day and age that you lose that badly two games in a row.
And you lost that badly to two non-playoff teams last year. So even though the Nashville Predators right now are sitting in second in the West, and they're obviously improved, getting Mike Ribeiro and getting Derek Roy and all of that, and Pekka Rinne is back and healthy, the Toronto Maple Leafs have put up two stinkers against... It's not like they put up two stinkers against the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings, Richie. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of cause for concern. And I know as soon as they lose games like this, you start talking about, well, if the players stop playing for Randy Carlyle, is Randy Carlyle's job on the line? I look at this team and you look at the goals that were scored, and Morgan Rielly didn't look good. Roman Polak was minus four in that game. Phil Kessel, he's never been a good defensive player, but when is Phil Kessel going to mature here, guys? And we know what kind of offensive talent he has, but this is the best offensive player on the team. Like, this is the guy that they count on, along with James Van Riemsdyk and other players. But, I mean, Phil Kessel's not 21 years old anymore, and he still acts like that. And, you know, he says, well, I don't always have to talk to the media. Well, it's not just about talking to the media. It's how you compose yourself and how you present yourself. And to me, there's really cause for concern in all positions. Jonathan Bernier hasn't been good, and you don't want to just throw the goalies under the bus. The defense hasn't been good. That was the big issue with the Leafs last year, Drew. And, you know, all the advanced stats were pointing that the Leafs were going to regress after having that horrible start. So the question becomes, is this just a bad team? Like, should they have expected to be better than this? Because, I mean, right now they're sitting in eighth, so it's not like the whole season's over here. It's only been 20 games, 19 games for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's not like you throw your arms up in the air and say, okay, well, next year. I mean, there's still a chance here, but you have to think, you know, is a trade coming, or is something coming, or are they going to just hope that it gets better here? Because, to me, I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and not only... See, like, to me, Richie, it's not that they're just inconsistent. They can win games, and then they go out and they get smoked. So it's either one team or the other. They're very bipolar as far as I'm concerned.
Well, first off, I mean, who's running the team? So if we're going to be changes, who's running the team? I don't know.
I think it's Brian Burke still.
Yeah, is it Dave Nonis? Is it Kyle Dubas? Is it Brendan Shanahan? Like, who is it? I have no clue. So that's the first question. And then you talk about coaching change. Well, that's inevitable.
During the season, you think?
No, it's inevitable he'll get fired. If it's during the season or after, I mean, his writing's on the wall. I mean, he's there to be fired right now. So it's just, everybody knows it. Lame duck. And the team is terrible. I mean, you watch the team play, they're brutal. I mean, I don't know, what do you want to break down this awful team? Sometimes they play well, sometimes they don't, because they're not very good. I mean, their defense isn't very good. Their goaltending's been suspect. Their forwards are a mishmash of talent that doesn't seem to be to fit together. And then people are surprised that they don't play well at times. Sure, they get blown out once in a while. But this team is so poorly constructed. There's no vision. And we don't know who's running the team. And then everybody's got to write about it. And there's 3,000 media members interviewing the guys and with useless quotes. I mean, it gets tiring. The same tweets by the same writers. It's like, it's over, guys. It's this... Get a new angle. Think of something new.
Well, here's Cody Franzen. Cody Franzen was asked if the team is trying to get Randy Carlyle fired after these
performances. Like, who asked that question? So what's he going to say? Yeah, you know what? We're playing to get the coach fired. That's what Brian Brooks talking about. Idiotic questions like that.
Here's the question. Okay, Remus doesn't have it yet. He might not know anything about hockey. We're not sure he knows anything about producing either.
I'll give Remus a break here. He was finishing his corned beef sandwich from Bernstein's Deli.
Okay. Cody Franzen.
Is this team playing like it's trying to get its coach fired?
No. That's crazy. That has nothing to do with it. You know, for some reason we didn't have it the last two games, and it has nothing to do with that. We like our coaching staff. We think we're building towards something strong here. And in the last couple of games, we've gotten away from it. It's that simple. We aren't doing what makes us successful, and it has nothing to do with that.
What a ridiculous question to ask.
No, Cody Fratton. It was Steve Simmons.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, he's been writing for a long time for the Toronto Sun, but what did you expect him to say? Yes, we're playing to get Randy Carlyle fired. So they're trap questions, right? I think you're going to get that. He's going to say no, and you're going to get the headline out of that, and then there you go. And I'm so tired about hearing about this team. This team's not very good, and it's not very good. So they're going to get blown out some games, and they're going to win some games. And everybody's going crazy on Twitter. It's instant access. There's newspapers, websites. Everybody's got to write about this team. This team's not very good. Like, what are we breaking down here? They don't have a first-line center. They don't have a number one defenseman. Their goaltending, again, is suspect. They have no mix. Their top six is brutal. A couple guys who can score, but they're the same kind of player. Mishmash of talent on the bottom end. Guys who are not good enough to be top six, but really not checking guys.
So what do they do to... How do they get better?
Well, I think...
You blow it up!
I think, you know, when you're talking about what Richie said...
Do these guys have trade value? Do these players have any trade value if they stink as much as they do?
Well, we've heard already that a trade isn't coming. The coaching change isn't coming. So all we can do is look at what we can see right now. And when you have question marks in goal and you have question marks on defense and there's question marks at center, you know, Peter Holland's played well and Nazem Kadri hasn't. But you look at this team and, you know, Richie, you mentioned the management. I think that's interesting because, you know, Brendan Shanahan comes in, and you know, the question is, well, is Dave Nonis on borrowed time? Is Randy Carlyle on borrowed time?
The problem is we know the answer is yes to both of those. That's the problem.
So that means that there's now a problem from the top down.
Yeah.
Now there's uncertainty as far as where the team is going. And I think that is why, you know, and I know what you're saying as far as, you know, in Toronto, everything is micro-analyzed, and it always will be. And that brings up the question, well, is this going to be a sinking ship the entire year?
That's what Brendan Shanahan knew. This team was going to be bad, and he knew that he could get another year of Nonis and Carlisle and pay them and get rid of them and not have the new guys come in, or if he's waiting for Babcock or not, have the new guys come in and take any blame, because he knew this year was going to be terrible. So he thought the new guys were going to be much better. He probably didn't think they were going to be much better because he knows the team's garbage. But,
given their current roster composition, given that they've got a lot of these guys under contract for a number of years, how do they get better next year?
Well, you have to make changes, Drew. You have to be willing to make trades. You have to change a lot about this team.
So,
you have to make trades, Drew. These guys have value. There are some players here who have value.
Who's taking on Dion Phaneuf's contract?
I don't know. If you're retaining some of that contract and you're trading him to a team that needs a guy who can eat top 4 minutes in a non-pressure market, maybe somebody takes it on. Maybe Anaheim takes it on. I don't know. Maybe Phoenix takes it on. There are teams, if you eat some money, they'll take it.
Right. And to answer that question, Drew, you have to really, I mean, you'd have to look at the team as a whole, right? But when you're starting with Dion Phaneuf, I mean, he's just signed to a long-term contract next year. So does that make him tradable? As far as I would be concerned, I don't think the Leafs, that would be at the top of the list. You could start with forwards that maybe are getting paid too much for what they're doing. And Joffrey Lupul's had all types of injury problems.
Terrible
and,
contract.
And he's not probably the most desirable as far as teams wanting him, Drew. But I think you look at a lot of players on this team, and Jake Gardner and Morgan Rielly, young defensemen, have struggled big time defensively. And, you know, Jake Gardner just got the contract, and Morgan Rielly was obviously a fifth overall draft pick. But there's a lot of teams that would want players on the Maple Leafs. I think as a whole, they're not playing well in all areas of the game. And you see kind of this one good game, couple bad games, one good game. It's very inconsistent.
This roster's terrible, though. Look at this roster, Mizzy. I mean, you're talking about consistent. It's exactly right. You're 100% right about the way they play. Look at this roster. I mean, you have top six guys who are flaky, talented but flaky. You have bottom six guys who, again, are just a bunch of players put together. I just don't see it. I just don't see how you expect this team to be very good. Then you got your defense should be better. Should be. But, you know, you talk about Phaneuf there, Drew, and other guys, otherwise they don't need bad contract. I mean, Robida for $3 million, 3 years, at least adds a toughness and a veteran element there. That's not going to kill you. The $7 million for Phaneuf, yeah, that'll hurt you, especially if the cap not going up. But the to me, it's not the $8 million for Kessel that kills you, because he's still going to get you 40 goals, probably. Mm-hmm. It's a 5.2 for Leupold, the 5.2 for Clarkson. Leupold's hurt all the time, and I don't even think he's worth it anyways. Clarkson's not that kind of a player. Everybody knows that, except for Edmonton and Toronto. Both tried to sign him. So, I mean, these are the problems that you have. So you got to be able to blow it up. Will somebody take the Leupold contract? Maybe take another bad contract out. Maybe you're buying it out just to change it up. I don't know. Some of these contracts, I agree. The Clarkson contract's untradeable. I don't think Phaneuf's untradeable. I don't. And that could be traded. Because in a different market, the guy can play top four. And there's certainly drawbacks to his game. If you eat some of that deal and maybe take a bad contract back with a little bit less term, you can move it. Do you get any better? There's a lot of work to do. But Brendan Shanahan knows the guys right now in charge are not the guys he wants in charge. And I think they're just sitting there waiting to be fired.
And if you look, Drew, and I think you make some good points, because you have to, even though it's only 20 games into the season here, you kind of almost have to start looking towards next year if this keeps going the way it's going. Because right now, as we mentioned, they're in eighth in the East, so there's lots of hockey to be played here. But if they start putting games like that out on a consistent basis, come January, they could be out of the playoff picture.
And there are guys in the media, to Brian Brooks' point, there's guys in the media who want these guys fired. They write the same thing all the time. Who are basically angling for these guys to be fired, especially Randy Carlyle.
Right, Richie. And so the question becomes, is it possible that they turn this around internally? Of course there is. I guess previous history would indicate the way they choked at the end of the last season, maybe that this current group can't do this. But, you know, let's see what happens here, because the last two games, those were ugly losses. Ugly.
And it's just two games, but I'm talking, forget the losses, I'm talking big picture. This team is, where is it going? You have Gardner, Riley, Kadri, what's he? Gardner, Riley have this potential. Riley, what's he? Nylander, we don't know what he, I mean, this is not a team that's got a ton of prospects coming through the system here. We had Ken Daniels on at 6:30 there, and he's talking about 10 guys in Detroit flowing through the system like nothing. All developed, all 24, 25, or going to be, coming up here. And the Leafs, like, what are the Leafs? Like, when you look at the Detroit Red Wings team, again, those teams, every team's close in the standings, but look at the Detroit Red Wings team. They're paying their $6, $7 million, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Cronwall. Whereas it's paid to Leupold, Clarkson, Phaneuf. And you wonder why this team is going nowhere. It's not rocket science.
Before we go to break, we're going to do a giveaway. Yvon Cornwallier, the 10-time Stanley Cup champion. He's going to be in town on Tuesday. He's speaking at the Winnipeg Blues annual dinner. He's going to be on Saturday Spotlight, coming up Saturday here on this show, courtesy of the Winnipeg Blues. They've given us some tickets to the dinner, so give us a call now, 204-780-1290. Remus is going to pick a caller, and we'll send you and a couple friends to go to the Winnipeg Blues annual dinner this coming Tuesday night. Go see Yvon Cornwallier. Go see a 10-time Stanley Cup award winner, and forget that we had this conversation about the woeful Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Leafs aggravate me.
I could tell.
You turn on the TV, it's all you see is
the
Leafs.
Richie, that's not uncommon at all where we are here in Winnipeg. It seems to be like a pastime here in the prairies.
There's a round table on the Leafs. Every time they lose a game, we need to have an analysis around a glass table. But the Leafs, they're terrible. Just get over it. Move to the next terrible team.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening here on NHL Midweek. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. They've celebrated their 30-year anniversary, so to another great 30 years of comedy. Check out their lineup. Purchase tickets. If you're looking for a place to have your company Christmas party or even New Year's Eve, I know that you guys are already planning your New Year's Eve plans. RumorsComedyClub.com for all your needs. There's lots of great things happening at Rumors, of course.
Yeah, it's great. Rumors just celebrated 30 years, and I also celebrated 30 hours of sobriety.
Oh, congratulations.
I looked across from the press box yesterday, and I'm pretty sure I saw you holding a beer.
I had a few. 30 minutes.
30 minutes of sobriety. You know, I think to watch that game, you had an opportunity to have beer. You know, nobody's going to criticize you for taking you up on that.
Yeah, I was expecting the prices to be a little bit lower, throwback prices.
But wasn't there free pizza or something?
Yeah, actually, there was a deal. You got, I guess, a pizza, slice of pizza with the beer for $10.
Oh.
But I had eaten before.
That's never
so someone you. Offered me a free piece of pizza, and I actually just kind of re-gifted that pizza just because I wasn't full. Or I was full. That's, but anyways, it was a fun time.
I think that's
time.
The first time. I've never heard that. I've never heard of you doing that before.
That was fun. Fans got the lithograph. It was a good night.
Yeah. NHL, some injuries from around the NHL. Earlier today, it was announced out of Pittsburgh, Pascal Dupuis is going to be out 6 months with blood clots in his lungs. Obviously, a very scary incident, and we wish him nothing but the best of health to get back in action, hopefully sooner rather than later. But, of course, his health will be first and foremost. Separating that on ice, what does it mean for the Pittsburgh Penguins to lose Dupuis for the next 6 months, pretty much for the year?
Oh, it's huge because, he's moving around. He played with Malkin before the season. He's better, to me, chemistry with Sidney Crosby. Obviously, his health, as you mentioned, Drew, is first and foremost, but his ability to play defensively and find the open spots and complement Kunitz and Crosby playing his off wing. Everything about that injury really hurts Pittsburgh Penguins, who are especially top-heavy guys like Blake Como running in the top six, frankly, aren't top six forwards. Yeah, the Penguins, they're able to kind of get carried by those superstars, but when they're playing the East, granted, but when they're playing against deep teams, they're going to have a lot of trouble, as far as I'm concerned. I don't love their defense either.
Have you ever seen a team as snake bit with injuries lately as the Pittsburgh Penguins?
It was a very scary incident with Chris Letang. He suffered a stroke last year. This is really scary stuff when you start to have blood clots. What's really unfortunate is that Pascal Dupuis missed the playoffs last year. He missed basically half the season last year with that knee injury. And Pascal Dupuis, Richie mentions, he can play in all situations. And of course, as Crosby's line mate, Crosby, Kunitz, and Dupuis have really had great chemistry for a long time now. He's a huge leader in that dressing room. Pascal Dupuis, they look to Pascal Dupuis. When you talk about the leadership group there, obviously Crosby is included in that. But Pascal Dupuis is very admired for his work ethic and all of that. He's a big part of that team, and it's really unfortunate. He was having a good season to date.
Good teams need guys, especially good players, need guys who can play with them, don't need the puck all the time, can play solid defensively, can skate and be smart players. That's good players love to, a guy like Crosby loves to play with a guy like Kunitz, and Malkin likes to play with, say a guy like James Neal can score. But the other winger needs to be a guy who doesn't need much, like a Frolik.
Yeah,
That kind of a player. Doesn't need much, doesn't need to do anything, just needs to be that defensively responsible guy who plays a smart game. They excel when they play with those guys.
And Richie, a guy like Pascal Dupuis, he's not going to go in the Hall of Fame, but he's had a great career, and he's the type of guy, he'll always be a great complimentary player as part of winning teams, and he'll do whatever role you ask of him, and he's won the cup in Pittsburgh. He'll be that type of player. So it's bad news for Pittsburgh. Other guys are going to have to step up. It's nice to see Bo Bennett's back in the lineup. Pittsburgh, to me, is a team that's primed to acquire a player. They're always active around the trade deadline. You might see them.
Those moves haven't altogether worked out for the most part.
Yeah, Iggy didn't work out quite too well. But you look at where the Penguins are at. They're playing well, but I wouldn't be surprised if they acquired another top six forward even before the trade deadline.
I think they need to, and if they have that depth of defense in the system, which you've heard about for a long time now, is that coming or what? Maybe that's one of the players that they end up flipping for an offensively gifted forward.
On a positive note, Olli Mato returned to the lineup last night in Montreal, which is terrific, coming off of his tumor that he had in his hip.
Yeah, some scary things going on in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And Mato returning, in terms of on the ice, obviously not as important, but Mato returning would only make some more of those prospects, especially because he's young and talented, a little bit more expendable if they need to add some forwards. Because when you get down to matchups in the playoffs, guys, you need to be able to have some depth up there.
If you're a Boston Bruins defenseman, just wrap yourself in bubble wrap. Mm-hmm. Just do it right away. Just go right now to your local hardware store and wrap yourself in bubble wrap, because they lost another defenseman. Adam McQuaid is out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken thumb. I mean, I think it's pretty much every Bruins defenseman now has missed some time this year with injuries.
Yeah, and it looks like Zdeno Chara is going to come back. He hasn't been skating, but it looks like he is on his way back a week to 2 weeks from now. he's obviously their best defenseman, but Adam McQuaid, he's been playing in the top four. Dougie Hamilton's been playing in the top four. Adam McQuaid was, when they won the Stanley Cup back in 2011, he was kind of the sixth, seventh defenseman, yeah. Richie, but he's gotten better as he's gotten older, but that's a terrible injury. And the Boston Bruins do have some depth on defense, but, you know, without Chara there, without McQuaid there, you've already traded Johnny Boychuk. This is a completely different defense than it was a year ago.
Moving to Chicago, they lose Trevor Van Riemsdyk for the next 3 to 4 months as he's injured himself. Pardon me, 2 to 3 months. I believe he broke a bone in his leg earlier this week.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I mean, it means you're putting in guys in spots that they're not as familiar with. And remember, this is only, you know, this is only makes there more pressure on the Chicago defense after they lose. When they lose, they trade Nick Leddy, right? So what you have there in this case is you have your top four. You know, Oduya, Chalmerson, Keith and Seabrook, but then you have Roosevelt, and you have a guy like David Rundblad. David Rundblad just defensively is such a liability. You know, offensively he's going to bring some talent there, but defensively he's his liability. And when you're playing, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, Van Riemsdyk isn't exactly, you know, he's played well. He's a young player though, so that's an issue for the Blackhawks. Well, let's be honest here. That back end depth wise, Nick Leddy, they're trading their five defensemen, cap reasons, all that stuff. But when you play against the LA Kings like you did in the conference finals, they have four lines. Mm-hmm. So you better have three pairs of D that can stop them.
That's it for this Wednesday and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Stephen Wino of the Canadian Press, and Ken Daniels, Detroit Red Wings play-by-play broadcaster. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Saturday, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Joining us in the Saturday spotlight, 10-time Stanley Cup winner, Yvonne Cornwallier. For producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. This has been NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.